But the reaction from the human rights supporters was they welcomed the decision. Family, friends, and supporters were very happy.
It is Wednesday, October 31st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, tensions are high in Pakistan as the country's Supreme Court overturns a blasphemy conviction. Turkey says Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi was strangled immediately after entering the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. And singer Drake joins the King of Pop in his newest single. It's all ahead. Pakistan's Supreme Court Wednesday overturned the conviction of a Christian woman on a charge of committing blasphemy, a crime punishable by death under Pakistani law. The landmark ruling sparked protests by hardline Islamists and raised fears of violence. Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan warned what he called a handful of protesters across the country to not take the state on over the landmark Supreme Court verdict. I spoke to VOA's Aisha Tanzim in Islamabad about reaction to the ruling on Asia Bibi.
So the reaction from the human rights supporters was they welcomed the decision and they said justice has prevailed. And of course, Asia Bibi's family, friends and supporters were very happy. But if you look at the reaction from Islamist parties in Pakistan, they have strongly opposed the verdict. Some of them, who are a little more extreme than others, have said that they will take matters into their own hand. Some of them have announced that or told their members to go out and kill Asia Bibi wherever they can find her. At least one group called Tehreek-e-Labbaik Ya-Rasulullah, or TLY, has issued an edict against the Supreme Court justices who passed the decision and said that the three of them should be killed. They've asked for the removal of the army chief and the removal of the government. So they've been holding protests across the country today. However, so far we have not heard of an instance of violence. There have been minor altercations with police, and in some cases media has been attacked. But we have not heard of a report of anyone getting killed today. So that means that so far the government has been able to control the situation.
Did the Supreme Court give a reason for overturning this conviction?
Yes, the Supreme Court said that the prosecution had not proven beyond reasonable doubt that Asia Bibi had committed blasphemy. And Asia Bibi's stance in the court case was that she never did, in fact, she said that she took an oath over Bible, since she's a Christian woman, that she never committed blasphemy against Islam or Islam's prophet. What she said was that she had a dispute over water. She fetched water for some women laborers that she was working with. They would not drink water from her because she was a Christian. A heated argument ensued, and Asia Bibi thinks that that argument led to this false accusation of blasphemy against her. The court has noted several things in the case that they said cast a doubt over the prosecution's case, and they've given Asia Bibi not just the benefit of doubt, they've said that it seemed that there was malicious intent in this blasphemy charge.
Well, following her earlier conviction, there were a couple of killings in regard to people who were, I believe, trying to help her and help her case.
Yes, there were. This has been, and this issue of blasphemy has been a very controversial issue in Pakistan. So on one hand, human rights organizations again and again report that this issue is misused. But on the other hand, the Islamists think this is their space and they do not want to allow anyone else to come into it. So basically, the very powerful governor of Punjab province who wanted to get Asia Bibi amnesty after the accusation was killed by his own security guard. And then a minister for minority affairs who was Christian himself, who was lobbying to get the law changed, because, you know, if you're convicted under blasphemy law, the sentence is death. He was lobbying to get the law changed. He was killed. And over the issue of blasphemy, dozens of people over the last few decades have died in Pakistan, often killed. A student was lynched by a mob in his own university. So this is a very volatile issue in Pakistan, and religious sentiments run really high.
Is it known where Asia Bibi, what she will do now? Can she stay in Pakistan, or will she have to leave the country?
It will be very difficult for her to stay in Pakistan with so many edicts and announcements. So nobody knows where she is right now, obviously for her own security, and nobody knows what's going to happen to her. There is a lot of speculation, and there is some precedent in the past of people getting asylum in other countries or moving out of the country.
VOA's Aisha Tanzim reporting from Islamabad. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. President Donald Trump wants to end birthright citizenship. President Trump is staging 11 rallies heading to next Tuesday's congressional elections. India unveils the world's tallest statue, and Australia will not join the global migration agreement. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Jupiter Trojans are asteroids found in two large swarms that circle the Sun in the same orbit as the planet Jupiter. Among them is the Patroclus and Minucius binary asteroid system, which is a pair of asteroids that circle each other as they orbit the Sun. After studying the system, scientists at the Southwest Research Institute have found that their existence suggests a battle between the gas giants Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune within the first 100 million years of our solar system's history. The scientists say this skirmish pushed Uranus and Neptune outward, where they interacted with small objects in what today is known as the Kuiper Belt. David Nesvorny, lead author of a study that details the group's findings, says this interaction pushed a number of these objects inward, with a few becoming trapped as Trojan asteroids. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll have a report on the controversy in Venice over huge cruise ships. A Turkish prosecutor says Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi was strangled to death immediately after entering Riyadh's consulate in Istanbul before his body was cut into pieces. The statement was issued by Chief Istanbul Prosecutor Ifran Fidan. Khashoggi's October 2nd disappearance at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul created an international firestorm of controversy, threatening the already complicated relations between Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and the U.S. Reporter Dorian Jones in Istanbul tells me about the prosecutor's statement.
So the Istanbul public prosecutor has confirmed previous leaks from the investigation that Khashoggi was, in fact, according to the prosecutor, killed very quickly after he entered the Saudi Istanbul consulate by strangulation. The prosecutor says the body was quickly dismembered. He said all of this, from their investigation, was premeditated. This was a plan that took several days to prepare, and his body was dispatched in a very quick and efficient way. The prosecutor also has been quite critical of the Saudi prosecutor that is visiting Istanbul as part of this joint investigation. He says key questions still remain unanswered, in particular, where is the body? According to Saudi officials, the body was disposed of by a local collaborator, but the Turkish investigators are still waiting to find out who this person was to help them find the body. And also they have a number of other outstanding questions. What has the investigation in Riyadh turned up? In particular, who was involved in this premeditated operation?
Did the prosecutor say how Turkish officials got the information regarding Khashoggi's death?
No information about how they found out these details. If you recall, there has been a number of reports, including from the Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, that they do have recordings that captured the last minutes of Khashoggi's life inside the consulate, recordings that have now been shared with the CIA chief, Gina Haspel, and also, according to the latest reports, with the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, and the French President, Emmanuel Macron.
This follows calls by both Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, as well as by Khashoggi's Turkish fiance, calling for Khashoggi's body. Well, according to this, you wonder how Saudi officials will respond.
Well, indeed, this really is a point of tension between Ankara and Riyadh. They have persistently asked for information on to locate the body. Now, this is very important, not only especially for the family members of Khashoggi and close friends to help achieve closure and to have some kind of burial. But it's also very important for forensic scientists and investigators to confirm their investigation and the findings about how actually he died, and also to help in steps to prosecute those who are responsible for it. But as of yet, they say Riyadh is not cooperating. And in fact, this really is a point of tension. The Turkish president has repeatedly raised this and is becoming increasingly angry over what they see is this intransigence by Riyadh. Riyadh's only response so far is to invite the Turkish investigators to Riyadh to cooperate with the investigation there. But there is a feeling in Ankara and Istanbul that is just more foot dragging by Riyadh.
Because certainly the killing took place at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul.
Yeah, that's another real key point here, because Ankara is demanding that any prosecution and criminal or court case should be carried out in Turkey. They say that the crime was committed in Turkey and therefore the court proceedings should proceed in Istanbul. They are requesting the extradition of the, so far 18 people have been detained in Riyadh. But as of yet, the answer is no. Riyadh says no. Any criminal proceedings will be done in Saudi Arabia. Another point of tension between Ankara and Riyadh.
Dorian Jones reporting from Istanbul, Turkey. Well, another 2,000 troops are on standby at the U.S.-Mexico border to deploy, and that those troops are in addition to the 5,200 plus 2,100 National Guard already announced. I'm joined by VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb with the details. Carla, what have officials there said?
Well, that's right what you said, Sarah. I have just learned that there are an additional 2,000 active duty troops on standby. Now, I know this is a lot of numbers, so I'm going to recap that really quickly. That is 7,300 at least already being deployed to the border. That is more troops than are fighting terrorists in Iraq and Syria right now, U.S. troops. And that number could potentially grow if those 2,000 extra active duty get put into deployment mode. That could be potentially 9,300 troops helping to fight something at the border, but they won't really be fighting. So let's talk about what they'll be doing. They are not allowed to perform domestic law enforcement. Troops are not. So they are prohibited by law, and the troops will spend their time basically putting up razor wire and offering logistical support to Border Patrol agents. But this is a huge deal regardless. This is supposedly the largest peacetime mobilization of active duty troops at the border since the Mexican Revolution in 1916.
Wow. How much of a danger do officials at the Pentagon think, or potential danger, is there?
Well, that's what we can't get clarified. So we know that they're going there to help with border security. We know that there are a couple of caravans coming to the border. We know that the president has said that there are a lot of gangs, et cetera, coming across the border. But no general has clearly defined that. The reporters here at the Pentagon today asked Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, is this a political stunt? And he said, quote, we do not do stunts. And the general there says that this is to help with border security. This is not a stunt. But there are critics that feel like that is exactly what that is happening right now. The midterm elections are next week, and a retired Army colonel actually slammed this as a component of a partisan midterm electoral strategy, using the military's credibility to support anti-immigrant propaganda. Now, that has not been confirmed. I'm not trying to say that that's what's going on either, but there are clearly multiple sides of this pointing the finger, and some are saying this is helpful and some are saying this is a political ploy, and we're hoping to find out soon exactly who they're defending from.
Yeah, because is this a decision made by the top brass at the Pentagon or by the president or by by both of them?
Well, the president, of course, has been calling for this, but this is all because there was a request from the Department of Homeland Security. So they sent a formal request last week to the Pentagon saying, we need additional help. And so the Pentagon has given 2,100 National Guard. National Guard are the usual men and women that are sent to help in these situations. Both President George W. Bush and President Obama had sent the National Guard down to the border during their times. So this is not something that is a rare occurrence in that aspect. What is rare is the additional active duty troops, more than 5,000 being sent to help. And that has come as we learn more about the request from the Department of Homeland Security and exactly what capabilities they need.
All right. Thanks very much, Carla. That is Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. The population of Italy's Renaissance canal city of Venice has been on a steady decline for years. At the same time, the number of tourists keeps rising, and many Venetians complain their city should not be turned into what some critics describe as a Disneyland on water. Their biggest complaint is about the arrival of gigantic cruise ships that dock right at St. Mark's Square. From Rome, Sabina Castelfranco looks at the dilemma the big ships present for the city and its economy.
The Venetians have long called them monsters because many say the massive cruise ships in their lagoon are not only eyesores that block the view, but also displace water due to their size and have been hurting the foundations of the city's gorgeous Renaissance-era buildings. Nearly 99% of the 18,000 Venetians who voted in an unofficial referendum organized by the No Big Ships campaign group in June last year, said they wanted the vessels to stay out of the lagoon. Fewer than 6 months later, and under intense public pressure, the Italian government announced ships weighing more than 96,000 tons will be banned from entering St. Mark's Basin and have to dock elsewhere. Now questions are emerging, mainly by the cruise industry, on what the restrictions mean for the economy of Venice and Italy in general. Cruise lines say they have an interest in protecting the sites they seek to showcase and are defending their presence by pointing to the economic benefits their ships bring to port cities. Cruise Lines International Association President Roberto Martinoli spoke to reporters in Rome. He said the cruise industry represents nearly 3% of Venice's GDP, and this, he said, cannot be ignored. Martinoli contends the ships should not be blamed for Venice's problems and notes they represent less than 10% of traffic in the lagoon.
Non siamo i responsabili del sovraffollamento. I croceristi, infatti.
He said cruise ships are not the giants of evil that some say are responsible for the city's overcrowding. Cruise passengers represent, he added, only 5% of Venice's tourist numbers and have diminished by a quarter from their peak 5 years ago. He also said the cruise industry has spent billions on environmental research and innovation projects. It will not be easy to convince Venice residents who say the damage done by cruise ships, especially to the environment, outweighs any economic benefit from tourists who patronize the city's cheap souvenir shops, restaurants, and museums. At a demonstration earlier this year, Stefano Micheletti of the No Big Ships Committee expressed sentiments common to many Venetians. Micheletti said large ships must stay out of the lagoon because it is not only about the visual impact next to St. Mark's Square or the possibility of an accident, but about the lagoon's ecosystem. Big ships must stay out, he added, because they are a cause for pollution that critics say is ruining the historic city. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. A singing star of today joins a star from the past in a new single. VOA's Border Crossing host Larry London joins me with details.
Today it's a brand new song from one of the hottest R&B singers on the planet, Drake, from his new Scorpion album, which has streamed close to a billion times already. The new song features a deceased artist. In fact, this is not the first time that a hit song has been released by Michael Jackson, even after his 2009 death. This is the fourth posthumous hit for Michael Jackson. This one is with Drake, and the song is called Don't Matter to Me.
Hey, you know that's not the way to get over me. All I was said to you is that you don't want me to know.
That's an interesting combination, Drake and Michael Jackson.
Well, it is. In fact, the song originally was by Michael Jackson. Drake has given it new life on his Scorpion album. And Drake's had one heck of a big year, as we all know. He got the song of the summer with his last hit, In My Feelings. He's had three number one songs now off of his Scorpion album, which came out earlier this year. And that song, which was a song that Michael had recorded a number of years ago, is Michael's 30th top 10 overall hit, because the song debuted at number 9. Wow. Meanwhile, Drake himself broke a record set by the Beatles in 1964 this past year by having the most top 10 hits in one year with his 12th, and the Beatles' record was 11 for that feat. So congratulations to Drake on yet another big hit record. And also last week he turned 32. He had a big themed birthday party. It was a 2000s themed birthday party. Diddy was there, and quite a few other celebrities showed up for the birthday parties. And they all wore jerseys from sports heroes back in the decade, the 2000s, like Kobe Bryant with his Lakers jersey and some other things like that.
Where did it take place?
It took place in Los Angeles at some club. Now, Drake owns his own company, and it's called OVO, which stands for October's Very Own. And Drake's birthday is October 24th. So happy 32nd birthday to Drake. And congratulations on the new single, Don't Matter to Me.
Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. Don't Matter to Me, the music from the duo of Drake and Michael Jackson. Well, that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.